Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Productions presents Black Herb America. We Talk Productions is one of the few black-owned internet companies that addresses issues in our communities. On Saturday night, we have Provocative Thought by Carter Steve. On Tuesday night, we have myself, Black Herb America, and my name is Kenny Jones. On Wednesday night, we had The Elephant in the Room by Chaka Zulu. Every second Tuesday night, we have Healthy Relationships by Miss Ann Diller. Every third Tuesday evening, we have T. Nathan and Calm Down, the Let's Discuss Racism. And that's the lineup. If you have a comment or a statement, please dial 909-265-9215 and press 1. Now, you know there are shows that I have political talk. I have people from the Democratic Party, people from the Republican Party. I'm very objective and neutral in discussing the issues. But tonight I have a guest by the name of Mr. Ray Bell, and he is a representative from the Log Cabin Republicans. Now, when I read up on the Log Cabin Republicans, I'm always determined the Republican Party as white conservatives. Matter of fact, right, when Trump won his presidency, you know, there was a big picture with Vice President Pence, with a number of white folks, and a black man was in the back walking out. Now, when you talk about gay, lesbian, the LGBT community, you always associate it with, like, the Democratic part, the independent part. So, therefore, gay Republicans always been in a fight for the last 20 years. This is nothing new. They came out back in George Bush's father was president. And I just want to know, like, how are they being received, especially with this type of how to say, personality in the White House. So, Mr. Bell, how you doing?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So, how was that introduction trying to explain, like, the log cabin Republicans and what y'all trying to achieve?
Yeah. So, I'll give you a little background on the log cabin Republicans. It was founded in 1977. What had happened? They
that
were
long
the,
ago.
Anita Bryant. That long ago. Yep. Anita Bryant were doing the Save Your Schools campaign, and they had passed a law in California to, essentially make it illegal to be, openly gay and be a teacher. And a number of gay activists, conservative activists in San Francisco, had gone to Ronald Reagan and asked him for his help and to help defeating that bill. He had been out of the White. He was out of the governorship and. Starting to think about running to the White House, but he went and got involved and helped defeat that bill. That group became Log Cabin Republicans. So a lot of people don't realize that, the beginning of the Log Cabin Republicans was with Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan was really the first politician, major politician, that ever stood up for gay rights. You'd never know that, but that is the truth on it. So,
Hollywood. He's Hollywood. Hollywood had always had open arms for people, how shall I say, alternative lifestyle away from the norm, so-called quote-unquote norm.
Yep.
Yeah, so definitely, I could see that. Let me ask you something, Mr. Bell.
Yep.
How do your peers, when I say your peers, I'm not talking about gay lesbians. I'm talking about Republicans, okay?
Yep.
And when you fight, when you advocate for different bills and different legislatures, how are you received by fellow Republicans? Because like I said, I always view Republicans as white male conservatives. So how are you received?
Right. We are received very well. I have never had an issue in my 20-plus years being involved as a Republican activist. I've never had any sort of issue. Obviously, there's been issues, of course, when marriage and that type of thing. When I was out here in California during the Prop 8 debate, and it was heated at some times. There was definitely, some Christian conservatives that weren't for it. But surprisingly, there was a lot of that were. And the other thing that's really interesting is that when you take out the word marriage and you talk about, having civil unions, having civil rights, even the majority of Christian conservatives will support, a civil union or even marriage with the understanding that their real concern is they don't want their own church to have to be forced to, recognize marriage. They don't want to be forced to that. That's really where their feelings are, where they come against it. But other than that, it's, I've had very, very open arms, very, very, even in some of the very conservative parts of the Republican Party, which I do consider myself, a conservative, in the very conservative wing of the party. So I've never really have been very received very well. It's been pretty good.
I mean, you don't walk around with a sign and say, look, I'm a gay Republican or anything like that. Maybe yourself with, like you talked about, the same-sex marriage. And then people kind of think like, okay. But same-sex marriage has always been like maybe a Democratic issue, a Democrat fight. What you think?
Yep. Well, it's a lot of things have passed for gay rights have always, in the state level, have always happened with, the help of definitely Republicans. So there's always been, hand in hand. If you think about this, Bill Clinton signed the Defense of Marriage Act back in the 90s. And this is another very interesting story. The author of that bill I forget which Barr it is, but there was a Congressman Barr from Georgia.
Okay.
Wrote that bill, and many years later he actually regretted it, and he had come to a log cabin event and he actually apologized for writing that bill and said that he was wrong. So I think there's I think the Democrats give a lot of better, you know, lip service, and they make it sound like they care about these issues just as, you know, more. But I think if you, when you get down into the Republican and you get one-on-one with people, you do find that, you know, it's not exclusively just for the Democrat Party. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, do support, you know, equal rights for, you know, gay and lesbian people. I think where the real big thing with the Republicans are is I think Democrats tend to look at everything as a community. They look at, you know, this community is, you know, black, this community is gay, this community is whatever. Republicans look at people, it's about the equality of the individual. Sounds very much the same, but it's very much different. You know, it's really about giving the full boat of the, you know, the Constitution to every individual, but not as a applied to a community. It's a little different, you know, I think for perception. And I think the media, unfortunately, in the country doesn't do, you know, a justice to the Republicans. I think there's a bit of a bias, and they tend to spin that in a negative way towards Republicans. So that's been my experience.
So how do you think President Trump views the LGBT community?
He has been, you know, he's been very supportive.
The President Trump is supportive of the LGBT community.
Absolutely, and I'll give you an example. So our ambassador to Germany, Rick Grenell, is openly gay. He was appointed by President Trump. He was actually sworn in by Vice President Pence. Rick and his husband both were there, and you know, Vice President Pence.
Isn't Vice President Pence considered the Christian right?
He is. He'd be very much considered Christian conservative, and but he's definitely
a good man.
No, it wasn't. And this is the thing that's very interesting is Rick Grenell and the administration, they're on a campaign to decriminalize homosexuality throughout the world. And Rick is leading the way, and he's got the full support of President Trump and Vice President Pence. The issue is actually very important to them. And so that they are working on that together. So I think there's a lot of there's a lot of things that are not true. When you come to, like, say, for the transgender ban, there really wasn't a transgender ban. There really was – it was taking a look at a policy that openly let trans people, you know, serve, but didn't really address that this is actually a medical condition. When you have people who are going to go through surgery or going through hormones or going through these things, there was no guidelines around that. Now, you know, Trump made a tweet, and he tends to do that, that made it sound, you know, what it wasn't. But what ended up – long story short with that, what ended up coming back was that you had – a policy to allow trans people to serve in the military. So they can serve. They have to be within their new gender within about 36 months of surgery. They have to be actually through and transitioned. And it's looked at as a medical condition, not as a civil rights issue. And I think that's where people have a hard time understanding that. You actually have more opportunities to serve as a transgender person in the military than you do if you had chronic heartburn, believe it or not, or GERD. Mm. So I think there's a lot of things sometimes the media doesn't really, you know, represent the administration the right way or give the view the right way. I mean, Grant and I will admit this, you know, the president does sometimes these tweets that kind of cough the cuff do cause a lot of his own controversies. So I have to, you know, admit that or be aware of that.
Well, the military came a long way.
Yep. Absolutely. So, I mean, I think it's good, and I think I don't think you'll see any changes there, but it's there's definitely opportunities for transgender people to serve. So, I think that is a good thing.
You said one tip? I said, did you forget the tip? One tip? Yeah, I mean, I know I want to be there. Oh, I didn't know. She ordered it. Yeah, I didn't know she ordered it. I'm so sorry. I'm at my controls, and I'm so sorry. I have another person on the line. Let's see. Donald, is that you, sir?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on here.
Donald, I want you to meet fellow Republican, Mr. Ray Bell. Mr. Ray Bell, I want you to meet a fellow Republican, Mr. Donald Scroggins, who
Scoggins,
is running for office.
Don Scroggins.
I always get the last name. who is running for a seat on the county board in his state. Now, you guys, I'll say y'all have similar backgrounds, but both of you guys don't fit the Republican norm to me. I've been following Republicans. You talk about 1977. Well, I was 18 years old in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when Purchase said Republican, you have a clear image. All right. So, do you consider yourselves as pioneers?
Mm-hmm.
Start with you, Mr. Bell, and then we'll go with you, Mr. Scoggins.
Okay.
Okay. Pioneer. You know, I guess I would say more than go again. I buck the trend, I guess. I know, you know, a lot of gay people tend to be Democrat. I don't. I mean, I think there was a lot of other
or independent
before me. Yep. So I look at myself as more bucking the trend as than a pioneer.
How about you, Donald?
Okay. With me, to tell you the truth, I look upon myself more of a maverick right now because my thinking actually is not that unique, especially I would say from the 40-50 years ago when the Republican Party, I think, was more hospitable to minorities, because most blacks that I know that are Republican from the time that I, you know, really got involved with it, they were more or less from the entrepreneurial business side of it. You know, they weren't too much in the social. They weren't too much in the social issues, because 40-50 years ago, you know, the gay issue wasn't there, and even abortion wasn't there. You know, so we tended to be more on a fiscal side. And I've even talked to many blacks today. They say, well, you know, I really think like Republican. I'm conservative fiscally, and I'm socially. They tend to be more, I would say, more tolerant. And that's the view that I have. I think that as far as I'm concerned, it's not an issue with me, you know, because I think there are more important things to be dealing with versus that type of thing, you know. But I will say this, that is the Republican base, which tends to be very rigid on certain things. I guess they wouldn't call it rigid, but they tend to, the base to me seems to stress certain things that you really can't do anything about. You know, like if someone's going to have an abortion, you can't tell them not to have one. They can still have it, you know. They may not tell you, but they can still have it. And the same thing about a person that's gay. You know, you could tell them you may not approve of certain things or whatever, but it's their own business, really. You know, you can't go around looking at everything they do. So I don't really concentrate on things that I really don't have much control over. Now, when it comes to fiscal matters, you have some control over that, because you can either vote the person in or vote the person out, or either get run for office and have some try to have some input. That's the way I look at it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that I think the Republican Party has changed, you know, has changed a lot. Another interesting thing, Log Cabin, back I think prior to 2008 or something, you know, couldn't get a sponsorship. They weren't allowed to be a sponsor at CPAC. And then actually Andrew Breitbart helped us and got us. So now we'd be able to get a sponsor table. And now, I mean, I think the last couple of years, we actually ran and put the whole thing together. So you've seen an evolution in, you know, in the Republican Party too, and more, you know, that they've become more cognizant of the issue, being more inclusive of, you know, gays and lesbians for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I will say this, Mr. Bell. What is your first name?
Raymond.
Ray, okay, I will say this, Ray. Despite what you said, which I think is probably true, Republicans today have certain issues that, I mean, despite past biases that maybe are not quite as apparent today, there are certain things today that makes it hard to support the Republican Party, and that's one reason why I consider myself still a Republican, but from a political standpoint, I consider myself an independent, because if you want to run for office and have some impact within your community,
right,
you have to get a seat at the table, or you have to get an opportunity to be able to do that. And
right,
if you have that R beside your name, especially in the black community or in the community like where I live, it's majority minority here in Northern Virginia where I am. Yep. I mean, you can go around and trump the Republican line all you want, but if the people are not going to accept it, so you can get a seat at the table, then why be that way? You know, I mean, I'm for policy over politics, to tell you the truth. I mean, if I have to be an independent to get in a position to do what I want to do, I'd rather do that than to be a rock rib Republican and you can't get elected dog catcher, you know. So, and the Republican, I hate to say this, Republican Party, as it relates to minorities, they don't seem to understand that, you know.
Well, the way I look at it a little different. I think that what happens is that people that run the party are the people that show up. And if you have a party that you only have a bunch of white people that show up, well, then that's who's going to run the party.
That's
so
right.
I think it's really important for more people to get involved. And I think that people, you know, I think the Republican Party can do and is trying to do a better outreach to, you know, to minorities. Right here in California, we just, our party chairwoman is a Latina. That was, you know, a pretty, because it's always been a succession of, you know, I guess the older white man. So we've
right.
had that. So there's, I think that's how things, you know, things change. If people just, you know, if people don't get involved in the party, then that's who's going to be that becomes a default. So
yeah,
that's how I look to make change.
Let me ask you this question. How do you get them involved in the party?
You know, it's one-on-one conversations that I have with people. I have people that I bring to our monthly meeting here in San Diego. It's just a conversation that I have. It's getting them involved. And once they see that it's, once they see that it's okay, wow, it's not what I thought. It's not, you know, there are a lot of other people that look like me there. And I think that people are okay, get a little more comfortable.
Yeah. But see, the problem that I have, like you in California. Okay. Now I'm in Northern Virginia. California is basically blue. You know, it's sort of like, it's very much of a challenge from what I understand out there. But why I'm here in Northern Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., and everything, the way I look at it, and that's one reason, I tell you again, that's one reason why I became an independent, is because when I talk to people on a one-on-one basis about the Republican Party issues and, you know, like fiscally and entrepreneur, you know, when I talk all the things that they purport to represent and everything, I get a lot of affirmation. But as soon as I mention that, oh, you know, I'm a Republican, they say, you know, that's sort of like a non-starter, because, I mean, I don't know your position out there in California, but you and I can have one-on-one conversation with some of these individuals, but I don't have any real clout in the Republican Party. And in Northern Virginia, I would say the Republican Party of Virginia, you have the South Side, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with the geography of Virginia, but the northern part of Virginia tends to be, I would say, like California, for an example. And when you go out of the D.C. area down in South Side, going towards North Carolina and Tennessee and all like that, you're in Alabama, Mississippi, you know. That may be a little stretching a little bit, but you get the point.
Yeah.
You know? And they tend to be the ones that control the nominating process because they're very passionate. They will show up at the conventions and different things like that. So it's almost like you're swimming upstream. And a lot of the things that I would say that the Republican Party should do, they can't do or don't do because if that base that dictates who gets the nomination, you know. And I'm not as young as you. I'm not as young as you, Ray, and I can't. I mean, at this stage of the game, for me, I don't want to just keep dealing with pipe dreams, you know. So I think that I think the most optimum thing to do, and I've been advising a lot of young Republicans and young independents, that if they really want to have an impact in their community, they have to do it in such a way that they can be able to put themselves in a position where they can make policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can't make policy. If you can, you can have all, go to all the, I mean, you know, you can run for an office and everything, but if you're going to run as a Republican and you can't, and no one's going to pay any attention to you and everything, I don't care how good the policies are, they're not, you're not going any place. The only thing you do is give the party bragging rights to say, well, you know, we are diverse. You know, we got so and so, you know, we got these. But see, the people that you are trying to represent are the people that you want to encourage to become members of the party. They see that.
Yeah.
If you looked upon as being a sycophant and everything, to me, that's even worse than being a member of the party. I mean, you know, who wants to be used, you know? And if you allow yourself to be used, then mm-hmm. you really don't get any respect from the people that you're trying to encourage to become a member of the party. And there are some crucial issues, particularly within the black community, that needs to be addressed. And they're not addressed by the Republican Party. You know, they would talk about bringing yourself up by the bootstraps. So either whenever you talk about that, everything is limited, you know, what is it, limited taxes, all these things, you know, they talk about things that are sort of academic, but in the real world or in the practical world, they don't make sense, you know. And that's, and I've come, you know, I've said that, you know, I've kind of like gotten tired of being a purist, so to speak, in terms of the party, and that's basically it, you know. And so that's my spiel, you know.
So, well, I think that, you know, each party, you know, each part of the party, so the, you know, you have the RNC, then you have each state party, then each state party has a county party, and then each county party in some cases have their own, you know, their own local party. So I think the thing is that, you know, is there some local parties that maybe are not so inclusive, probably, but mm-hmm. I think what happens, you got to change everything little by little there. But I think the big thing is, and one thing I do have to say, you know, if you look right now, The unemployment rate, especially for minorities right now, has never been better. It has never been better. And you're seeing right now, you're seeing economic, you know, the increases in the economy and salary and everything are happening. It's not for the really wealthy people, but it's for the working people of all races. And I think that's the big thing. The Democrats right now, with their socialism and all this thing, is I think it's really time for a lot of minorities to say, you know what, let's look at something different.
Yeah, but see, Ray, I think what you just said makes very good sense. But you can't mm-hmm. even get your position. You can't even the party is so damaged right now. You can't even get to the point where you can even get in a position to do some of the things that you just talked about as a Republican, you know, because you look at the top of the thing, and you talk about employment. The employment that you're mm-hmm. talking about are service type jobs. They're not sustainable type. They're not industry or hard business type. You know, they tend to be, you know, service. I mean, because I'm on the ground, so to speak, and I see these folks. You know, I'm in a majority minority county, and we don't even have a trade school here. You know, and these young people are graduating. Some of these young people are graduating from high school. They can't afford to go to college. They can't afford to even go to trade school, and everything. And what all they can do is try to get a job in the McDonald's or something like that. And unfortunately, they call that, you know, getting jobs like at Home Depot and Advance. You know, getting these retail type jobs okay. You know, but they're not. They're not something that somebody wants to stay in until they get to be 45 and 50 years old, you know. And
There's a couple of things I saw. That one was that I think there is an increase in, you know, higher quality blue collar jobs in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. We are seeing a return of that, and we are seeing a return of, you know, higher wages than that. But the thing you said about trade school is really, really important, and I think that's something that just transcends, you know, race completely. It
has, yeah,
it applies
it
to
does.
Really everybody
it
because
does.
We don't have any trades. We don't have any trade schools. We're forcing all these kids into college, and college may not be the best thing for any for a lot of people,
that's
black,
right.
white, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's a huge thing that we really do need to have more trade schools.
Yeah, but
and
you
more
know
access
what? They don't
that.
Talk. But you don't hear the GOP using that as a. I mean, I've heard Donald Trump. I hear some people talking about it, but it's at the local level that a lot of these things
yeah.
need to be. Just like at the national level, you hear them talking statistics about the unemployment rate being better and everything like that. But it's the local level that things
yeah.
need to be dealt with. You know, these jobs in Virginia, like the furniture industry and textile industry, and even the coal industry. I mean, these jobs are not coming back. You know, so there are people who. There are people who were unemployed, who basically just kind of like dropped out of the system in terms of looking for employment. So I really don't know. I don't want to be a killjoy on everything because I think the president, whatever happens, good. I think he really deserves the credit.
Okay, we have a caller on the line. We have a caller on the line. That was during the conversation. Welcome to Black Herb America. The last one, 0272.
Yeah, how you doing, Brother Kenny?
Hey,
how you doing, brother?
Hey, what's happening?
Nothing chilling. I listened to your brother's. I heard the brother speak up. Yeah, it's soccer.
Hey, what's happening? You can join in the conversation.
I was just hearing a brother talk about the employment and whatever in the Democrats and what's going on, and I wanted to chime in real fast because I just joined in, and I wanted to wait for it to go and listen a little bit more, but he said something that made me want to chime in real fast, and that's pertaining to unemployment. Like, we went from an agricultural economy. We went to a services from an agricultural to an industrial economy. From an industrial to a service economy, and from a service economy to a technological economy. And as a result, there's a lot of people that's not ready for this shift. That's why it's very important we teach our children about STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics, and I take them to these science fairs and let them know how important it is to learn technology and to get ready for this next economic shift. And I say that because Pew Research Center did a study, and they said by 2053, the median household income for black folks, African Americans, will be $0.
Oh,
by
boy.
2053, the median household income will be $0, according to Pew Research Center. And why? It's two reasons. It's automation and immigration.
Mm.
When you look at the Asian Americans, it was about 4 million Asian Americans in the year 2000. In 2015, that went up to 15 million Asian Americans. By 2053, you're looking at around 40, 50-something million Asian Americans. So you're looking at us, and our numbers is moving up, but not as much as it's supposed to because of the abortion rate. And so when you look at all these levels and you look at these policies, because once Obama left, ain't no way in the world some politician, like we asking these other politicians about reparations, but ain't nobody, it was asked of Obama, but not like it's asking of these politicians now. People ask, so these Republicans and these other politicians, they really ain't going to listen to us. We let him get away, and they really don't have any solutions for us. So I just wanted to chime in on it.
Well, let me say something. Let me just chime in right quick, and I'll try not to dominate it too much. This young fella just mentioned what you did. I'm glad that you mentioned that because I'm right here in Prince William County, Virginia, and we have quite a large Latino population here. And when I talk to some of the young men that are doing these jobs that may be a threat to blacks and everything in terms of I talked to some of them in the countries that they're leaving, the countries that they're coming from, they teach the trades over there. They got trades in their schools over there. And then they come over here, they at least know how to do some drywall and then they have the work ethic. You know, they get out a beat up truck or something like that and go around and they can at least know how to lay block or do a little something, you know. But our young people, they can't do anything. And then we complained, and then someone said, if the Republicans wanted to do something, they would be champions of trade, just like it was way back in the day when the black community was segregated. We had a lot of trade schools because they knew they at least had the wisdom to know that blacks couldn't get some of these jobs. You know, they had, you know. So I'm just saying that the reason why we're going to have zero, zero income, what you mentioned, is because we are not preparing our young people today for those jobs. And if you train somebody, they could at least, whether they be whether they become one or not, they could try to be a little entrepreneur. You know, they can go around and have, you know, maybe two or three of them, you know, the young people today, maybe two or three of them can get together and form a little business. One person could be the bookkeeper, and the other person could be the guy that goes out or the gal that goes out and drum up the business, and somebody else could be the technical person. But we need to start, we need to be a little more innovative about how we train our young people today, you know.
So one thing I just want to say about this. This is a bigger issue. I think it crosses race and everything, that we are going to an information technology economy, and this affects a lot of people. And what's a big, big concern is you have these companies like Amazon, Facebook, Google, Apple.
Yep.
They're all these tech leaders, and they're really, you know, they're seeing technology is taking off, and we're seeing automation, and then you're letting in all the, you know, we don't have control of our borders and everything like that. So first thing that's happening, all these, you know, these lower skill jobs are just going to disappear. These mid-range jobs are starting to disappear. It's a big, big, big thing. And the middle class is definitely going to disappear. Absolutely. And the tech giants, they could care less. And that's why they're all behind having about socialism and all these, you know, universal basic income and universal health care.
Because they want to be able to control people.
They want to be able to control people because they're going to have to deal with it.
I agree with you, Ray. They want to push all that socialism on the minority community and everything. Then you're going to be, we're going to be worse off than we are today.
Well, that's what I mean. And they want to control. They want to control people. That's what it's about.
When they unroll these 5G technology, not the phone, but the grid. When they unroll that new spectrum, that's the beginning of the end of everything, because you're talking about automation, because you're dealing with that spectrum that nothing else is on, a different frequency. You're talking about they can put a smart dust. They got stuff called smart dust. They got the new Wi-Fi called Y-Gig up to 300 gigahertz. You're talking about all this technology, and it's taking away, like Amazon is going to be the reason there's not going to be no malls in 4 to 5 years. All miles is going to be gone in 4 to 5 years. The old self-checkout lines at Walmart, they spoon-fed us with that technology because they're going to replace all cashiers. Just like we go to a cashless society, it's only 3% of the currency that's only physical cash.
Because
that's why they give you cash back, because it don't take that much money to deal with it. You see what I'm saying? That's why they like giving people cash back, because they want to get the money out the system. And so they prepping us. They know you can't do anything overnight. So it's as a people and as a race what they're doing. You see what I'm saying? And so when Obama passed that FCC Act with Tom Weber in 2016, and talking about the 5G grid, and they went past all the safety measures and all past that. They just want to unroll it. People don't understand. They look at, you can download a high-definition video in 2 seconds. Oh, it's fact. And people don't – that's why Elon Musk was talking about that universal income, because he said when you unroll this, he said there ain't going to be no jobs. Almost everything is going, and truck drivers, ain't going to be no truck driving jobs in 10, 15 more years. When they unload that 5G, all truck drivers' jobs is going to be gone in the next 15, 20 years.
You know, they just tested a ship with no crew, a cargo ship going across the Atlantic. So, I mean, there's a lot of things coming that way.
Really?
And that's the thing. The other thing, too, we didn't do a very good job as a country, you know, with the 5G, and a lot of that big conglomerate out in China,
HY,
they're the ones that, and it's a double-edged sword for us, because we need to be with 5G, but yet now we're offering an opportunity for them to listen in, to spy and all this stuff. So it's one of those things, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But, yeah, we've got a big challenge when 5G is coming, and it's going to be here around the corner.
Well, let me ask you this, Ray. Since you're pretty, you're pretty steeped in terms of the party out there in California, and you have faith and all like that. What do you see happening out there? Because I have a couple of friends out in California that are that are Republican, you know, and it seems like it's just sort of, you just find yourself going through the motions and everything, you know, and
well,
I don't know about you, but I don't like being used, you know.
Well, it's tough because right now you have the Democrat Party completely controls the entire, they control the entire state politically. You know, they have a majority in the Assembly, the Senate. They have the governor, so it's a problem. And you know, we had what was called the gas tax. They raised the gas tax, and then we tried to do a repeal, and they put that on the ballot to repeal. But the way they worded it, people didn't know they were voting for trying to repeal the gas tax. They thought they were voting against infrastructure. But it's those type of things that happen. But it's very, it's very frustrating. I don't feel used at all by the Republican Party. I really don't. And I know you say it's California, but you know, every party in the Republican Party, and this is true for the Democrats too. No matter where you are, where your base is, where the base of the party is, always going to be. For Republicans, they're always going to be very conservative, even in California, even in Massachusetts.
I don't mean to cut you off, but you're right about that. But, I mean, that if they're always going to be very conservative. They're the ones that are the obstructionists to get things done. And one reason why, when I talk to, because I'm a great talker. I believe in getting the pulse of people. One reason why the Republican Party is having such a tough time is because they hear the rhetoric, but they don't know what they will actually do. If they got in the, I mean, right now, despite, you know, I agree with you about the socialism, the Democrats, and this, that, and the other, but at least they're getting something. At least they're doing something, or at least they represent something. But with the Republicans, especially, if you get these people in the rural, very rural areas who are dominating the, are dominating the party, so to speak, they don't necessarily see what's happening. At least they don't have the sensitivity about what's happening in these urban areas, but they're the ones that control things. See, the Republicans do not have a governing, they do not have a governing record, so to speak, you know. I mean,
well,
they
need to show how
they can govern, you know.
Well, I think, you know, the election of Donald Trump was illustrated a failure of both parties. Both parties, you know, in 2016, it was really you voted for the lesser of two evils. That's what it came down to a lot of people. And I think that was just showed how broken both of these parties, you know, were and still are. I mean, the Republicans still have plenty of problems. You have, I give Trump credit because he is doing some things. I may not like the tweets. I may not like some of the things that go around with him, but he is doing things, and he is getting some things done, and he is, but you had the Republicans, I mean, what did they stand for other than, you know, at least he took on the job issue with the jobs going overseas, but you had Republicans that were complicit. The big thing I look at it now is that you have really what's called a ruling class in Washington, D.C., and it's made up of Republicans and Democrats and the media and all of this, and they want things a certain way, and I think a lot of the conflict you're seeing now is because, you know, Trump is blowing that up, and they don't like it, and that's why you see a lot of, you know, right now you have some Republicans in the Senate, especially with Mitt Romney and a couple other ones who are kind of, you know, not so happy with Trump, and they've come out and said things. But I think it's because he's upsetting that apple cart, because a lot of people in Washington made money by our bad trade deals. They made money by us going to war with other countries. They made money doing this. It was the way things were done in Washington, and he's kind of torn that apart, and that's why
you're... what you said has some merit and everything. He's torn that apart, but see, Trump may tear something apart on this end, on this side of it, you know, but he negates and he mitigates all the good he does or has done. He mitigates it or he negates it through his other things, you know, and that's the part that people concentrate on. You can't say, well, you know, he's a scoundrel, he's this and he's that. Yeah, but look what good he's doing, because I see it here. We got elections coming up this year, local elections, you know, and you hear some of the Republicans saying, well, you know, yeah, we know about Trump, but what about the unemployment rate? What about the taxes? What about this? What about that?
Mm-hmm.
You can't even get to that because we have such a failed figure at the top of the ticket. And the reason why I say that is because for over 50 years, I've been very active in the party, you know. And it's almost like everything has gone down a drain with Trump in there, because he's such a poor role model and everything. Can you tell your kid or your grandkids or your nieces and nephews or whatever, see that gentleman who's the president, he's someone we should idolize, you know. Usually, I mean, when I grew up, the president of the United States was sort of like was almost considered a, you almost deified him, you know, because they was sort of been such a
right.
sterling character, you know. But
exactly. Well,
but anyway,
I mean, I can understand that. I'm just happy that he is actually doing some things that are that weren't being dealt with. You know, I mean, he's you know.
He's not a good recruiting tool.
Gentlemen, let me ask y'all this. Do you think, and again, y'all made my job very easy tonight. I just want to thank you guys. Y'all brought up very good points. You hit things on you're making some very provocative thinking. But I just want to look. It's something that Donald alluded to. Do you think President Trump is a divider? Now, if you listen to some of these talk shows or some CNN, other cable networks, this man is labeled as a divider. They say this country has not been more divided since Nixon.
I think he definitely contributes to it. I don't think it's all on him. I think it's just what's really going on right now. And you have a movement on the left that they want, you know, they want the social and big government and all this, and they have this agenda, and they're not willing to move on it. They're not willing to, you know, give him an inch. But he comes out and he contributes that to that too. The media hates him, everything like that. So that's a problem. What's very, very interesting is Trump doesn't have support of the upper middle class people, independents who would normally vote Republican. He doesn't have that. He's got a base about 40-45 that are solid, but he doesn't get into that other area where that is. And I think it's because of how divisive the politics, you know, are just on issues. But I definitely do think he does. I don't give him a pass. He definitely contributes to some of that for sure. But
yeah,
also,
see,
the Democrats
a lot of,
also.
A lot of the divisiveness, and I know how you feel and everything like that, which is great and everything. But I hate to say this, or I will say it, is that looking back, I consider myself a fairly rational, even keel, you know, I try not to be a bigot or I try not to be ideological. I try to be look at all the facts and everything. But if you just sit back and just listen, and I think the era of Twitter and all this other stuff hasn't helped anything either, because Donald, you know, I don't know if he ever goes to bed, you know, but when he does all this tweeting and everything, you know, he has to comment on every little thing, even the most lowliest person. They say something about him, he has to respond, you know. And I'm just saying that he should be above a lot of that. He's supposed to be one of the richest men in the world, supposedly, according to him. He's supposed to had all the pretty wives and this and that. I mean, he's supposed to have all this stuff, but yet he's still got to look like he has to be proven something, you know. And people just want they just want a leader, or they want someone who can get things. I mean, we don't necessarily have to hear from him all the time. That's what I meant. Let his deeds speak for themselves, you know, and he's just not a good recruiter. You know, I don't know how active you are in California when it comes to trying to expand the party, you know, but I've had various offices within the party. You know, I was district chair, I was this, and, you know, I had various offices and everything, and I've taken very kind of personally and I'm very committed towards you. But when I see what he has done, like you even take, I don't know how many thousands of dollars that the RNC paid in 2012. They had this autopsy report or something. I don't know if you heard of it, the RNC.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
You heard of it. You know what? They have not done one thing that report recommended. And one reason why they didn't do it is because it was done at the national level. The RNC commissioned it, but all the work goes is at the local level. If you can't get the people at the local level to buy into that, then it was just a waste of money at the national level. And that's what you have. If the party is basically a Southern party now. And you take down in Alabama, what is the guy named Doug Moore and everything like that.
Yeah.
Some of these abhorrent characters, they've gotten to nationalize. In other words, whatever they're doing in Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia, wherever that is, the stench perception of whatever they're doing. Whatever they do, it sort of smears everybody across the country that are Republican, you know. And with the new media we got today, with all the way things are now, with all these media sources on Facebook and all these alternative medias and stuff, if you don't know how to control your messaging, then you're apt to be characterized in an unfavorable way, you know. And it doesn't seem like, and you take in Congress for an example, they don't. What has Mitch McConnell done besides just obstruct everything, you know? And so I'm just saying, I mean, they can't even come up with we don't want this, but yet we'll go along with that. They don't even do that and everything, and it comes up, looks like they don't do anything. And these guys are making millions of dollars. I think McConnell and some of these others, when they first got into Congress, they probably were almost paupers and everything. Now they, what, got $10 and $15 million a year. I mean, it stinks because it looks like everybody else in the country is not advancing, but yet these people in Congress, they're still getting their money, you know.
Well, that's a whole bigger thing, because happens to both parties. But the thing about, you said about the autopsy report, that is very true. They didn't do a damn thing about that after they did that, after 2012 loss, that they were going to look thing. And I think, and one of the big things was reaching out to minorities and non-traditional Republican groups and so forth, and they really didn't do any of it. And that's why there was kind of a vacuum after, you know, 2012. And then, you know, and then Trump was the one who filled that vacuum in 2016.
Well, he filled the vacuum, but look how he filled it and everything. You know, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't know what's going to happen next year, but I'll tell you this. I'm going to tell you this, and I don't care who hears it. I really hope Donald Trump doesn't run again, you know, because I don't think the country can take.
He's going to run.
I mean, well, he's going to run, but I don't. I hope he doesn't win. You know.
Let me ask y'all something. I've been very quiet.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you something. Again, Donald, you alluded to something that I want to ask a question about. How can you, seriously, like, think about what I'm getting ready to ask you, and I don't mean any harm neither when I ask you this. Mm-hmm. How can you be a part of something that don't want you a part of them? How can you be a part of something that don't even reach out to you? Like, for example, when I was a young guy, you know, the police department was reaching out to different minority men to join the police force, because there'd been a lot of police brutality and everything. They wanted more minority police officers. They reached out. Right. I never thought of the Republican Party reaching out to different minorities.
Well, I can't answer that question, you know.
I see it happening. I see it happening that there has been some outreach. But I'll say why, you know, I'm a Republican is because, and I said this before, that people that show up are the ones that run the party. So if I'm not there, if other gay people are not there, then there's nobody going
to
be in there. And the thing about it is,
how do you get
them to get there? But I'll give you an example of why I do what I do. So there was a woman, Rebecca Friedman. She's part of the teachers union, or she's fighting against the teachers union. She's very, very right-wing Christian conservative, and she's came in and she gave us spoke to our you know, our San Diego Republican Party, and mentioned all about, you know, about what she's doing with the teachers union. There was a lot of valid things she said about how the teachers union, you know, is really kind of, you know they're forcing an agenda on kids and everything like that. But then she kind of got off the rails and kind of got into some anti-gay stuff and everything like that. But after that, I had the opportunity to talk to her and, you know, have a conversation with her. And, hey, you know what? What you're saying is really not – I disagree with that. And maybe, you know, you've got a good message here, but you're kind of off the rails there. But that's why if I'm not there or people like me are not there, then these things are going to go unchallenged. Another example is that there was a woman going on Fox. I forget her name, but she's from the College of Pediatrics or something. It's some – it's supposed to sound like the official, like an MA, you know, a medical group. It really isn't.
Right.
It's really pushing a very hard right-wing agenda, anti-gay.
Right.
And I have some contacts at Fox News, and I was able to say, you know what, you really shouldn't have this woman on there. She's really not legitimate. And they, you know, I haven't seen her on. Maybe she'll be on again, and maybe I'll call whoever I know there. But these are the things that make a difference. If I'm not there, if I don't have access to these groups, then these people will just keep going on and on and on. And other people like me do what we do because we at least we provide a counterbalance, you know, a challenge.
Yeah, but you know,
say, hey,
but
you know
what? But you know what happens, Ray? I think you're very, very commendable what you do. But after a while, how old are you? About what, 30-some years old, maybe 20-something?
47.
Okay, well, you sound very young, much younger than that. But I'm, you know, I'm almost, not quite. I'm almost 30 years older than you. You know, but what you will find after a while is that you're basically alone. You're not. I mean, you're very committed and it's be commendable. But after a while, when you see that you're talking, you know, what you're doing is just sort of like in a vacuum and everything.
Yep.
Then it gets to be kind of old, and then you just sort of – that's the reason why I became an independent, because a lot of the people – a lot of the types of people that I talk to, which is just like the type that you talk to and want to encourage and everything, they tune you out. They tune you out when they see that you're not getting any place. I mean, I've had a guy that came to me and almost crying and everything. I said, "What are you crying about?" He said, "I don't want to disappoint you." I said, "What do you mean?" He said,
"Right.
I want to run for office." I said, "Fine, go ahead, but I'm going to run as a Democrat." I said, "Why?" You know, he said, "I can't do it as a Republican because I won't get elected." You know, so I said, "Well, do what you think." And see, what's been very tragic, particularly within the black community, is that the kind of philosophy or the kind of mindset that we should be trying to encourage, we can't get it out there because we don't have a voice. We don't have a voice, you know. And if you're going to continue to talk, I mean, it's all right to support the Republican Party and everything, but the kind of things that we've been talking about tonight, they don't respect that. And the only people they respect are these sycophants. I don't care whether they're Latino, black, or whatever. Those folks don't say anything. They're afraid. A lot of them are afraid of the shadow. You know, they don't say nothing because they want to get invited to the parties and get on Fox News. You know, they want to, you know, they want to be media stars and all like that. So they don't say anything. But well, we need people who have enough guts, and who are courageous enough to say what has to be said. And then when you do that, you will get some young people to come along. You know, you'll get. I really think that it's going to be those that are 40 and under that's going to save the party. You know, people who are more tolerant.
That's the millennium and Generation X. But I have to cut y'all off. Got a minute, some seconds left. Ray Bell, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
You're welcome.
Simon,
anytime.
I want to thank you for helping me out tonight.
Oh, come on.
And again, I enjoyed the discussion. A lot of issues came out, and y'all made my job very easy tonight.
Oh, come on!
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you, thank you, Kenny, for bringing it bringing this to my attention. Thank you.
Thank you.
To
you. And good night, gentlemen.
I'll see you.
Have a good day, y'all.
Okay.
All right. Y'all can have a good show tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
All right. That's it. Another week, ladies and gentlemen. I am because we are. We are because I am. Beautiful talk discussion.